Hey, I don't know about you guys, but me, I've had it up to here. There are some 40-odd homicides a day on our streets. There are over 2 million illegal guns in this city. Man, that's enough guns to invade a whole damn country with. They shoot a cop in our city without even thinking twice about it. Now, come on. I mean, you guys ride the subway. How much more of this grief we're gonna stand for? How many more locks we gotta put on our goddamn doors? Now, we ain't got the police, the prosecutors, the courts, or the prisons. I mean, it's over. The books don't balance. We are a statistic. Now, I'm telling you, you can't go to the corner and buy a pack of cigarettes after dark because you know the punks and the scum on the street when the sun goes down. And our own government can't protect its own people. Then I say this, pal. You got a moral obligation. The right of self-preservation. Now you can run, you can hide, or you can start to live like human beings again. This is our Waterloo, baby. You want your city back? You gotta take it. Dig it? Take it!
Junk Food Dinner 513. Our Patreon friends save us from quarantine boredom this week. First, an alien comes to Earth to stop a supervillain in the Spanish mockbuster Supersonic Man. Then, hard-ass men get revenge on street toughs in Vigilante. Finally, a human-ass man boxes space aliens in Arena.
Nous en sommes maintenant.
Welcome to Junk Food Dinner, episode 513. This is the podcast where each week we scour the internet, video stores, and cable television, searching for the most outrageous and interesting cult films. In Ohio, I am Kevin Moss, and I'm joined by my California co-host Parker Bowman in the 559 and Sean Byron in LA. This week, once again, we let our Dom DeLuise Patreon donors pick the flicks as we discover Supersonic Man from 1979, picked by Jeff P., Vigilante from 1982, picked by Andreas, and Arena from 1989, picked by Mickey. But first, gentlemen, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing terrible.
Terrible, you say? I hate to hear that.
I appreciate that. I'm going crazy. I hate all these viruses. I hate this capitalism. I hate this government. I hate it all. I'm just going nuts. It's ruining my life over here, all these things.
What's going wrong specifically?
Society. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I just hate it.
Oh, shit, dude. I'm sorry to hear that.
I appreciate that.
I think we're stuck with it, though.
Ah, that's what I hate to hear. I was hoping we could be rid of it.
Here's what I'll say. And Parker, I think I've told you this before. And I know you're a newsman, so this is going to be difficult.
Okay.
But you gotta get rid of that shit in your life. Don't worry about it. Just forget about it. You're surrounded with movies, fantasy, fun, little miniatures. Escape into that world. Don't worry about the world around you.
That is true.
It'll fix itself eventually.
At this point, I am literally surrounded by miniatures and movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, the good news is, at the end of this one, we're not all going to morph into some weird sexual orgy that's like, you know, some kind of Screaming Mad George effect. I will just die quietly in our homes and be discovered weeks later.
I guess that's a little bit more.
But surrounded by miniatures.
Yeah. And that cat Garfield, he's back. And if anybody was wondering about my life, so he'll be around.
I absolutely have been wondering about that. I put forth my theory about the crime that those possums in your backyard were the ones that killed Garfield. Have you gotten any closer to the truth of the mystery?
Well, I've been working the backyard beat, and I tried to track down those possums. You know, you saw on Instagram, I did have an encounter with them midweek where they were making quite a ruckus back there, fighting, hooting and hollering up on the fence line, and couldn't find them after that. So I haven't been able to interrogate them directly. Eyewitness accounts, to be honest with you, have kind of varied. So I'm not sure who to believe at this point.
Well, can we at least, is there a health update on Garfield? Is the man dead or what?
You know what, dude? It's like it never happened. He bounced back. He's got a spring in his step. I saw him banging this other cat just yesterday, this little one that we call Spotty. She's getting reamed by Garfield, so he's doing just fine, dude. Don't worry.
Damn. This is like a Pet Sematary situation out there.
It's getting wild.
Hornier than ever.
Yeah. Sometimes they come back with boners.
Exactly. I've seen that film.
Yeah.
That's the third one in the series.
But I think that is literally the only shit that's happened here, is just me looking at cats in my backyard while I smoke. I pretty much just have two kinds of days now that we've entered the quarantine. Like, I've got these lazy days where I sleep most of the day and eat like two huge, like Thanksgiving style feasts. And then like productive days where I eat three of them.
Well, what if I were to tell you that this weekend I saw not one, not two, but three movies on the big screen in public with a crowd.
What are you doing?
I wouldn't believe you.
How is this possible, you say?
How is this possible? Are the cops going to come arrest you?
Did you get a big screen-sized telephone?
No. Through the magic of drive-in movie theaters, I was able to accomplish this. The fine folks at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville, they're open for business, but responsibly. You got to leave 15 feet between you and the car next to you. No touching, no going up to somebody. They got snipers on the roof. If you get within 6 feet of somebody, you get one warning shot. After that, they shoot to kill. But yeah, no, it was great. You know, you get to stay in your car, watch movies. They even had a thing, and I think they were doing this just for convenience purposes to start the season. But with the whole social distancing, it works out well. They now have an app you can order concessions from. And then, you know, they text you when it's ready. You go up to a window and pick it up so you don't have to stand in line with other people. And you don't have to stand around waiting around for your food. If you ordered a pork tenderloin, let's say, you don't have to wait for them to prepare it. You just get a text and go get it. And it's great. And, yeah, everybody there was very respectful, you know, with the social distancing and everything. And they played three. I mean, obviously, we don't have new movies coming out right now, but, man, they really packed a night full of three early 80s weirdness films. We got to see Flash Gordon on the drive-in screen, which is fun. And then I saw Heavy Metal cartoon titties on the drive-in screen. Come on. And then they rounded the evening out with 1982's Forbidden Zone, the weirdest of the weird.
Oh, very nice. I love that movie.
Yeah, so it was a doobie-smoking good time at the drive-in. And yeah, and it was great just to get out and do something. And, you know, it's over in Indiana, so it was like a nice hour drive away from me. So I got to, you know, get in the car, feel like I'm wandering free. And, yeah, and like I said, all the while, being responsible, not getting too close to anybody. But, yeah, it was fun.
That sounds like a great time. Now, let me ask you this, Kevin Moss. Do you think they would be open to me slipping a little cash their way so that I could rent out the Skycade for a little private engagement in there, maybe play some pinball by myself if I promise to wipe things down?
Well, unfortunately, the Skycade is currently in limbo. The old Skycade has been removed, and then they are in the process of building the new Skycade, which is going to be attached to the concession stands, but it is not complete yet, so there's no Skycade to be had one way or the other. No amount of cash could get you that.
Did you purchase any memorial chips of wood from the old Skycade building as it was deconstructed? My understanding is, much like the Berlin Wall, they kind of pieced out little pieces of it.
No dice there. Well, you bring up a good point. I wonder what happened to the shed that once housed the Skycade.
Maybe they melted it down and they're going to put it, you know, in the ink of some comic books about the Skycade in the future.
Yeah, very Kiss of them.
Yeah, who knows?
But yeah, that was a lot of fun. And of course, today is 420, Stoner's Holiday. Have you guys been doing any celebrating? Did you smoke yourself, as Kyle would say, as high as John Glenn?
I have not. I posted on Twitter to make fun of that movie Super Troopers, and I made a lot of people mad. So that's, I guess, how I've celebrated.
Yeah, I've been too busy declining invites to watch marijuana-themed Instagram comedy live streams all day today to even pick up my marijuana pen. So,
yeah. Well, especially at this point, if you're, if you're a marijuana smoker and you've been quarantined for the last couple of weeks, 420 means nothing. This is just another day.
Yeah.
You've been getting high as hell all month, and you know it, so. You know, what's another day to you?
On that tip, though, I will say my local weed shop within the past few days has finally closed. And this is going to be sad to you guys. They've closed the dab lab. You can no longer go in to the little laboratory themed room in the back and smoke dabs off the community dab rig. That's no longer allowed. Was until like just a few days ago.
Really?
Yeah. People were going in there and just ripping huge dabs and, you know, coughing their way out into the parking lot, you know, just oblivious. But they had the probably order of the state, I would imagine. Gavin Newsom probably specifically sent a message out. No dabbing in the laboratory anymore.
Yeah, that seems dangerous to begin with.
Yeah. The fucking weed stores out here continue to be just crammed full of people. So I've been going and just trying to stock up as much as possible in one run and try and minimize my exposure. It's crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the weed store up here just actually closed down their dad lab, which is where you and your dad do science experiments.
While learning about marijuana together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's edutainment.
Yeah, it's really disheartening they had to close it.
Speaking of edutainment, and I won't dwell on this too long, but I saw WrestleMania, and it was interesting.
Yeah, what did you think of the... like those movie-like vignettes, like Lucha Underground that they did?
I thought the Boneyard one was okay. I mean, considering, like, Undertaker's a billion years old, and I didn't expect that to be, like, a super fast-paced match or anything. That Randy Orton-Edge thing went on for, like, 12 hours, and I don't know why the fuck they couldn't edit that if they shot it, like, weeks ago. You know, you should cut that shit down. And that Funhouse one... I almost threw my TV out my window, dude. That was the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I hated it so much. But some of the other matches were okay. I don't know any of these new guys. So, like, there was one where there was, like, a chunky, younger Cactus Jack-looking dude who took a big spot off, like, the Titantron or something. He did, like, a big fall. I thought that was cool. I don't know if you guys remember that, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the women's matches were all really solid. So we went back and watched that Women's Rumble. I thought that was really good, and I'm pretty impressed with the women's division. But other than that, I don't know. Like WWE, I think the whole tone of it is like just so cartoonish now that it's hard for me.
I'm surprised you didn't like that Funhouse.
You liked it.
I loved it. But yeah, I don't know. I figured it would have been up your alley, being like so weird and surreal and like silly and just like trippy and stuff. But
it could be that, you know, if I had been along for the ride with this character and whoever that juggalo looking character was and kind of saw his development or like understood kind of the build up to it, but I didn't. And so instead it was just like this confusing mishmash of like, you know, they're trying to replicate different styles from WWE history. And I'm like, okay, I get it. But do I need this to be like 20 minutes of just really, I don't know, aggressively loud attempts at comedy?
Yeah, I found it to be a bit much myself as well. But yeah, you want to find out what the stoners out there in Junk Food Dinnerland have been up to this week in this week's segment of Junk Mail?
Of course.
Hell yeah.
All right, sounds good. Let's see, who do we got first on the line? Caller, go ahead.
Hey, guys, just wanted to say happy 10-year anniversary. Wow, it just seems like I listened to you guys yesterday.
Hello.
This dude's in a spaceship.
He's in the Firefly Funhouse.
But yeah, it's been 10 years since you guys have been on here. I found you guys looking for Mad Bull 34, that anime. And then also, again, an interview with Zach Carlson. I love the show. It's great. You guys actually like the movies. You're not watching them sarcastically and just bickering about stuff and trying to be all snide about it. You guys actually have love for the genre, which is really cool. and I really do hope that you guys continue this awesome project for a while. And yeah, keep up the great work. I recommend a movie for you guys called Phase 7. No, it's not a sequel to Phase 4. It's an Argentinian film. Bloody Disgusting put it out on one of their select things, but it's totally appropriate of what's going on right now. And let me know how much it would be to support you guys on Patreon and get to review that. And jumping back to an episode, you were talking about the Short Music for Short People compilation. Come on, guys. We all know the best track is the one that's bass. All right. Keep up the great work. Stay safe. And look forward to hearing you guys next podcast. Take care.
Oh, thank you, unknown caller, for giving us a call. And, yeah, thank you for being a listener. And, yeah, thank you for the kind words. And hope everything went well in that spaceship that had abducted you at the beginning of the call. Hopefully they didn't. Hopefully they cleaned up the spaceship a little better than they did for Travis Walton. That's all I can say.
Exactly.
But yeah, Phase 7, I have never seen. Actually, I'll be honest, never even really heard of it. But it looks like it's one of these contamination movies, like you mentioned. Probably, I don't know if I would say these contamination movies are good for this time. You know what yeah. I mean? Like, I don't want to watch. The news is full of this shit. Just the opposite of what's going on in the world right now. I want to watch, men fighting monsters in an arena-style combat.
I mean, I would say yes and no, because it's, men fighting monsters in arena-style combat specifically, that's timeless. I'll watch that anytime. But a lot of times these days I'm watching shit and I'm like, can I relate to this? Can I relate to these scenes of people sitting in restaurants? At least Phase 7, hopefully, a lot of it I'll be able to relate to. I'm looking at it now. It looks pretty cool. I'd never heard of this either.
Absolutely. And, yeah, I mean, as long as you're bringing it up, I will not miss any opportunity to plug the Patreon. If you want to be like the fine folks this week and pick one of these movies for the show, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/junkfordinner. $10 a month gives you the privilege of a Dom DeLuise to put your movies in the hat to be picked every month. So, yeah. Go check that out. And if you're not already, check out all those bonus episodes of Junk Food Desserts over on the Patreon that you can get for $5 a month. We've got a back catalog of like 30, 40 plus back, 3-hour bonus episodes. So if you like the show and haven't checked those out, go check it out. All right. Next caller. This one comes to us from Peter in Portland, who has this to say.
Hey, guys. It's Peter from Portland. Just wanted to calls. I love you. Thanks for the great entertainment during this time of quarantine. It's really helping me pass the time while I pace around in my apartment and look for things to clean or eat or occupy myself. A couple of things I wanted to throw out there real quick. One is thanks to Kevin for the recommendation of that Fantastic Fungi movie a couple of weeks ago. It's streaming through my theater, so I got to support a local independent theater by renting that off of Vimeo. And, it's pretty fun, kind of spacey and, maybe not amazing, but definitely great, like, weekday viewing. Second thing, I've noticed for a while that the interviews on your website haven't been updated, and not trying to be a pain in the ass, but maybe we've all got a little bit of extra time these days. You've got some great interviews. Maybe you could update the links to those. Finally, I had a film history question. You talked about Little People on your last episode with the Freak Maker. Have you noticed that in really old movies, little people always have really high, squeaky voices, like in like even the Munchkins and the Wizard of Oz, Terror of Tiny Town, also Freaks. But then little people actors today, like Peter Dinklage, don't have that. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if you guys know, like, if that was something done in post in old movies, or if something about the medicine of the day made it that way. Maybe better nutrition in modern times. There's some simple vocal cord surgery that can be done. I have no idea. I'm just spitballing. I tried to Google it. Couldn't find anything. Figured I would ask my three favorite film buffs. What's up with that? So anyway, I don't know if you hear that beeping. My dinner's about ready in the oven. Take care. Love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. We love you, too. Thank you for calling in. And, yeah, good call, good questions, good thoughts. First of all, yeah, I'm with you. We've been slacking on the website. We need to get those links updated. We got a good chunk of our interviews linked there from the early days. But yes, we've definitely done some recently that I think we could get in the mix.
None of Rusty's interviews are up there.
Well, and rightfully so. That son of a bitch, the way he walked out on that one interview.
Yeah.
I won't tell you that.
Yeah, the Gallagher interview.
Yeah.
Well, that, and I think a lot of the older stuff, our host, archive.org, just like takes shit down and like changes the URL without letting us know. So a lot of older stuff is still up, but they've changed the URL so you don't. So you can't get it from our website. It's like really fucking annoying, and we have to change like all the links like every 3 years or something. And so that's probably where a lot of them are too.
Yeah, we'll figure.
If the links are dead.
Yeah. But yeah, and then to answer your question, well, I can't answer your question. I know just as much, if not less, than you do about the mysteries of little people's voices throughout film history. You know, with the Wizard of Oz and stuff, I wouldn't have been surprised if they pitched it up in post because they're munchkins and they wanted to give it some sort of affect. But you're right, it does seem like in a lot of older movies, little people had higher pitched voices. And yeah, I don't know what the history is behind that. I don't know if it's there's a legitimate reason for that, or if there's, I mean, yeah, your guess is as good as mine. So, yeah, maybe we'll do some. Maybe this is going to be one of those mysteries, like where did the flannel shirt on the werewolf originate? That'll just be mysteries forever. But if you out there in Junk Food Dinnerland have some insight for whatever reason on the voices of little people in motion pictures, and it can shed some light on this mystery, give us a call and let us know.
There's got to be an expert out there.
Yeah, there's got to be, and they got to be listening. Mm-hmm. And glad you enjoyed the Fantastic Fungi, Peter. That's a good one to watch on 420. And I hope you enjoyed whatever it is that was in your oven. Smelled delicious from the call. But if you'd like to give us a call on the Junk Food Dinner voicemail line, let us know what you're cooking for dinner or what mysteries of cinema you've been pondering, please pick up your phone and give us a call on the Junk Food Dinner voicemail line at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Or as always, you can send us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com. All right, that being said, let's get into some nerd news.
Sources of Junk Food Dinner Worldwide, it's time for Nerd News.
The first piece of nerd news that I have is this week, Joe Bob Briggs returns to Shudder for The Last Drive-In Season 2. If you have Shudder or are a fan of Joe Bob Briggs, no doubt you watched some of his Last Drive-Ins. Last year in 2018 and 2019, he had some marathons. He had some, you know, they were usually themed like around holidays. Like you'd have one for Christmas, one for Thanksgiving. He did a 24-hour marathon for Halloween, I believe. But now he's coming back with a season two. And from what I understand, this is going to be, it premieres Friday, April 24th. And it looks like this will be, a more of like a weekly thing. So it's not going to be like, you know, just special events. It's going to be back more like the Monster Vision, where every week he'll be hosting a double or triple feature every Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time on live on Shudder. And then, of course, it'll be available to stream after the fact if you don't want to stay up and watch it live. But I'm excited. I'm a big fan, as I've mentioned many a times. I'm sure you might be sick of me talking about it, but I love the Joe Bob Briggs. I'm so happy that he's back in the mix. I grew up, you know, loving Monster Vision and everything, and to have him back on Shudder. And again, I love the fact that he does it live, which is great. And yeah, I can't wait to see what movies he picks. But are you guys Shudder subscribers? And if so, are you going to be watching Joe Bob Briggs Last Drive-In this Friday and every Friday, presumably?
Yeah, I'm very excited for this. I'm hyped. I'm going to watch it in real time because A, I've got nothing else going on, and B, like some of the ones like the past season, I'd be like, oh, I'll get to that. I'll watch that a little bit later, and I wouldn't watch it in real time. And now a lot of that stuff's gone. So That's like a super bummer. So I have to watch it in real time. And I mean, that's the way I should have been watching it to begin with. I blame myself because it is a big communal experience on the internet.
Yeah. Well, one thing I was just going to say is one thing that is a bummer about this being on a streaming service is that, you know, when they lose the, you know, rights to the movie, ostensibly they lose the episode. I wish they would just keep the Joe Bob parts up, you know what I mean? Just cut the movie out of it and at least keep the interstitial stuff with Joe Bob Briggs, because let's be honest, most of the time that's what I'm there for.
Yeah, that's the only part I care about. Because a lot of the movies I've seen a ton of times before anyway, but he keeps saying that they're going to do that, like put all of his stuff up so you can watch just that even when they don't have the movies, but he's been saying that for like a year. And I guess there's also plans in the works to get all of the old like MonsterVision stuff, like just his parts on there too. So hopefully that all comes to fruition.
Oh, that would be sweet. Because, yeah, I mean, MonsterVision ran for so long. What I'd really love to see is the old Movie Channel show, which is the first show he had, Joe Bob's Drive-In, that was on the Movie Channel. Because that I didn't see, because, I mean, I've seen clips of it now on the internet, but that was obviously a little before my time, and I didn't have the Movie Channel, I don't think, at the time. And that is when, like, he did a lot of kind of more, like, not just horror stuff, but, like, TNA comedies and, like, you know, softcore stuff. So that would have been fun to see him talk about some of that stuff.
I feel like I did catch a little bit of the tail end of that drive-in theater as a kid. I did have the Movie Channel, mostly I watched MonsterVision and loved it as a kid, and you know, in my 20s read his books and loved those as well, but I guess it, either I'm some kind of a pose dog or I just don't have any time on my hands, because I haven't caught up with his Shudder stuff yet, and to hear that some of it's gone, that's a bummer, and I feel like maybe I should go and check it out now that it's weekly, because yeah, it being weekly is I think a huge part of the appeal, you know. As a kid, I always loved shows that had like a sense of continuity between episodes, you know, talk shows and things like this, where you feel like you're hanging with the host over a period of time. And it'd be cool to have Joe Bob in my life again.
For sure. Yeah, it's definitely worth it. And I mean, the dude, it's a mix of him just like dropping like serious knowledge about the film and then just going off on his, you know, tangents about who knows what. Which is all just part of the fun. But yeah, when he's talking about these movies, man, it's like super impressive, because, you know, as somebody that's spent the last 10 years talking about cult movies, it's like, man, this dude, he's the real deal. Like, makes you want to aspire to be better. But yeah, dude, is fun. So yeah, get a 6-pack of Lone Stars and tune into Shudder for the last drive-in starting this Friday.
In other TV show news, we have very not newsy news, but it turns out Joel McHale, the host of the new episode of Tiger King that makes all the previous episodes kind of seem much grosser in retrospect, he has said that they're closer, although nothing is set in stone, to a Community movie. Community was that TV show that Dan Harmon and Dino Stamatopoulos and the Russo brothers and like a billion other people worked on back before they were famous from other stuff. I guess Dino was probably already famous, but it turns out Sony called Alison Brie, the co-star, and has talked to her about it, and it's a possibility. Since the show got canceled, they've always said they're going to turn it into a movie. And I don't know. A lot of fans, myself included, are still holding out hope because it was a very good show. Did you guys watch Community, and would you like to watch a movie about it a million years later?
I didn't really watch Community. I watched a few episodes here and there when it was on originally. I had a roommate who was into it, and I caught a few episodes, but it was never something that I was like, yeah, I need to continue watching this. I mean, I liked, you know, most of what I saw. I thought it was funny. I don't have anything against it, but for whatever reason, I never went all in on the Community. But a lot of people I know really like it. So, yeah, I'll have to check it out at some point.
I have never seen not even 1 second of Community, and I listened to probably 3 or 4 years of Harmontown, but I never got around to watching the Community TV show. Sounds like maybe I should. Do you think I would like it, Bowman?
Yeah, I think that there would be some stuff in there that you would enjoy. It's on Netflix now if you want to try it out.
Oh, I see. Okay.
They did some
stream it.
You can stream it. They did some stuff that really pushed the envelope of what you could do inside of a sitcom. Like they did some weird stuff, some wacky stuff. I mean, it wasn't like experimental or anything by any stretch, but within the boundaries of a normal network sitcom, I think it was probably the closest thing we'll ever get to like transgressive content within that small framework.
I thought you said it was the closest thing we'll ever get to Transformers.
Also, there were robots. There was an entire like animated G.I. Joe episode, so that is somewhat accurate.
Oh, hey.
And Chevy Chase, fucking funny. That motherfucker. I understand he's problematic, but he's so funny on that show and in everything else he's ever been in. So if you're a Chevy Chase man, try it out.
It is a bummer now to be an adult and have access to news stories where you see on like a daily basis somebody being like, yeah, I was like a guest host on SNL and Chevy Chase came in and punched me in the dick for no reason. And you just see that like on a daily basis because he's fucking hilarious in those Vacation movies as well. I fucking love the guy in those movies. Just can't be beat. But a horrible man, apparently. Puncher.
Yeah, him and Dan Harmon had like some real beef when they were working together on the show. And you can like tell that Dan Harmon didn't like him because as the show progresses, Chevy Chase's character gets more and more like racist and evil. It's very funny to watch.
Well, I've got some nerd news over here. Says that a local movie maker talks coronavirus parallels to his 2003 opus. This comes via the Youngstown Warren, Ohio Channel 21 News at WFMJ.com. When Travis Bowen of Warren started shooting his first local horror film back in 2003, he had no idea how close to real life it would be 17 years later. It's ironic, he says, that it involved a deadly virus set in the year 2020. He actually thinks that humans could have created the coronavirus. And the movie was called 2020, An American Nightmare. It starred the late Conrad Brooks, who you guys probably remember from Plan 9 from Outer Space. He plays like a cop in that. He's also in Tim Burton's Ed Wood. And in a movie that I always want to do for the show, Hollywood Mortuary, this 2020 An American Nightmare also co-starred Joe Estevez, star of that Frog Warrior thing, or Toad Warrior that we watched that I loved a few weeks ago that Kevin is now coming around to, I've heard. No. The trailer for this 2020 American Nightmare can be found on YouTube. The director says it's more like an amateur movie because I was still basically a kid, but it helped me learn and was my first step into making better films like Midnight Massacre, starring Susie Feldman and Linda Harrison, said Bowen. And yeah, that is Susie Feldman, ex-wife of Corey Feldman, so very exciting. She's out there getting work. This story is a couple weeks old, so I felt a little bit guilty in picking it for the show as news, but the trailer for this 2020 An American Nightmare film on YouTube, despite being uploaded in 2007, still only has 800 views as of recording. So I feel like the story has not really gotten out there too wide, you know, past the Youngstown, Warren, Ohio area. I watched the trailer. I'm one of those 800. And I thought it looked kind of intriguing. You know, it's very backyard. It's very low budget, shot on video kind of vibe. But I would say it looked like it was maybe more charming than some of the fan films that we've watched. You know, probably doesn't have anything as creative in it as like the shoelace tying sequence in Chick Boxer. But this might be one that I would be willing to screen and see if it would fit on a theme show with that whatever that Phase 7 virus flick that we were talking about earlier. Do you guys have any interest in this? Did you watch the trailer? Do you like Conrad Brooks? What do you think?
I did watch the trailer for this. I like, hearing news about local Ohio filmmakers. But yeah, it looks like he was going for like a Troma vibe. In fact, he has Lloyd Kaufman in the movie. In a lot of the trailer. So maybe he's really trying to score some trauma points. I don't know if trauma put this out or anything, but
I don't think so.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, yeah, on one hand, yeah, good for you. You set a movie in 2020 about a pandemic. You really predicted the future. I mean, like we talked about, there's a lot of pandemic movies. 2020 seems like a pretty round number to land on. So I wouldn't consider this guy like the next Nostradamus or anything. Although someone did forward me like an underground rap song from 2013 by a guy named Dr. Creep. It was a song called Pandemic. And he calls out the coronavirus by name in 2020 is part of the song. So that guy. I got my eye on him.
Really?
Yeah, it's a song from 2013.
Is he like rapping about like beers or something? Like, why? How would he even have the words coronavirus?
Well, coronavirus has existed for a long time, and it's
So he's just really tapped into the
various
the virus community.
Yeah, I guess so.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, look up Dr. Creep Pandemic.
Well, he's a doctor, so I guess it makes sense.
Featuring Lone Ninja. I know you're a fan of both of those guys.
Sure.
But yeah, anyway, I'm sure stuff like this is going to be coming out of the woodwork, you know, all the time now. People that are saying, like, I predicted this. So. Yeah,
but how many of those movies will have Conrad Brooks in them?
Not too many.
Probably a few, actually, if you look at his IMDb in the years before his death. Dude was working.
Yeah, I was speaking of working. I was working all day, so I didn't get to watch the trailer for this. But it sounds very exciting, so I'm in.
It's pretty much what you would imagine, you know. It's chick boxer with virus makeup.
Yeah, but support those Ohio filmmakers. Go check it out. But while you wait for that movie to come out, let's talk about some of the stuff you can watch this week, right now. On DVD and Blu-ray with this week's DVD and Blu-ray releases. The first release that I have is The Curse of the Werewolf Collector's Edition, coming out from the fine folks at Scream Factory. This is another one of those Hammer horror joints. This is the one, of course, starring Oliver Reed as the titular Wolfman. As I've stated before, I'm not nearly as big of a fan as of the Hammer horror as I am of the Universal stuff. But this is one that I checked out early on because of my love of werewolves. There was a point where I would watch any werewolf movie because there's not a ton of them. And this one I watched as a youth on VHS, and I really like Oliver Reed. I think he's great, and he does a really good job in the in this role as the man with the werewolf curse. It's been a long time since I've watched this, and now that Shout Factory's got the nice cleaned up Blu-ray, I think maybe now's the time to revisit it. But yeah, like I said, if you like Oliver Reed, you like Hammer Horror, you like werewolves, Curse of the Werewolf, available now on Blu-ray. Have you guys ever seen Hammer's version of the Wolfman?
I think so. Is this the one where they say, like, in order to become a werewolf, you have to be born on Christmas or something like that?
That sounds British enough to be true.
Yeah, I think it was this Hammer one that I saw. I saw like some real stodgy European werewolf movie like 5 years ago or something. And the conceit was that anybody born on Christmas turned into a werewolf. And it was really boring. So if that's this one, I probably will not buy it. But I would watch it again. Like, that's such a weirdo, like, werewolf transmission idea that I feel like I can't totally hate it.
Now, this is the one that's a remake of the Mark Pirro film Curse of the Queerwolf. Is that right?
If only.
I wish. I haven't seen this. I like Oliver Reed, and I like werewolves, so why not?
But curses, where do you fall on those?
If you're talking filthy language, I'll have none of it. But if we're talking, like, hexes, hell yeah, dude.
Yeah. And this has got a cool werewolf design where the werewolf's fur in this is kind of, like, almost white. Gives him kind of a werewolf slash, like, abominable snowman kind of vibe.
He looks a little bit angrier than your typical werewolf. And, I mean, werewolves are typically angry, but Maybe it's just the Reed factor.
Yeah, Reed's pissed.
Probably drunk.
Probably drunk, too.
Well, speaking of curses, I got a lot of Blu-rays here.
A lot.
A lot of them. There's one, two, three.
Just pick one.
No, I got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 of these things.
You're selling these on eBay as a lot?
They just might be. They've put out 12 Girl Bloodsport Blu-rays.
I knew you would pick these. You know how I knew you would pick these, Parker Bowman? Because they're at the top of the list, and I didn't expect you to scroll through all of the Blu-rays.
Well, they were at the bottom of the list last week, but I didn't want to do them because that would be chronologically inaccurate. They're at the top of the list because they technically come out today, not tomorrow, as we record this.
Whatever company put these out, because I've seen them try this before in prior months, this is one of those companies, and there's a few of these guys out there doing this, who are like, I know how people read, you know, DVD release dates on Junk Food Dinner, and my trick to get on the top of Parker Bowman's mind is to, you know, release it on a Monday instead of the traditional Wednesday or whatever. It's a game. I know what they're up to.
Well, another way to get me to notice you is to be called Girl Bloodsport.
Fair enough.
I don't know if this is I think this is a narrative thing. It takes place in the backwoods of Columbus, Ohio. So this is apparently Ohio filmmakers.
Ooh.
I don't know if I think it's narrative, but it might also be real ladies actually fighting in the woods. But I think it's a movie about ladies fighting in the woods. It's kind of hard to tell. But there are many different editions. You can have the Smokin' and Tokin' version.
For today.
Exactly. The extended cut, the director's cut, the Bare Bones edition. You could also get the special edition, the behind the scenes edition, the collector's edition, the unrated cut, the producer's cut, the, I guess, theatrical cut, because it doesn't have anything in parentheses, the nightmare edition, or a different Smokin' and Tokin' cut.
So these are all the same movie, because I just scrolled right past these because I don't subscribe to this fucking Monday release schedule nonsense. But I didn't even know it's the same movie, just 12 different times. I figured it was like a series of films.
I guess it's the same movie, but like with different cuts and like different special features and stuff. I guess I don't know. It's like hard to tell. Some of them have more than one disc. Some of them are $25, but some of them are $99.
Which of them have the ultraviolet download code?
That's the one I want. For instance, the unrated cut is $80. But the Smokin' and Token version is free. Apparently it's free. I don't know. That's what Blu-ray.com is telling me. So I don't know. There's a lot of disparity in how much these things cost. But I don't know. I desperately want to watch this.
This is some Beelzebub type shit.
Yeah.
What it looks like from the cover art.
There's a lot of naked ladies in the woods wearing boxing gloves, holding up championship belts and bikinis and stuff. I definitely don't want to spend $100 to watch this, but I definitely want to watch this and find out what the hell this is, especially now that I know it takes place in Columbus. But how much dollars would you guys spend to watch Girl Bloodsport? And which version would you like if you had your pick?
Let's put it this way. Even if all versions of this were free streaming on every app that I had, I would check it out for all of 5 minutes and then immediately turn it off, I'm sure.
Yeah, man. I mean, I didn't have to pay a dime. I just got that free WWE subscription off, an extra Yahoo email address I signed up for to watch that Lady Royal Rumble. You think I'm going to waste any dimes on this Columbus, Ohio backwoods lady fight? No, thanks, dude. Where's Charlotte Flair?
Well, let me read the synopsis for you, just to give you a little bit more background. Chaos follows a deadly duo of maniac assassins. So I guess that means this is narrative and not real. After they host a brutal, no-holds-barred tournament inside a sinister steel cage surrounded by razor-sharp barbed wire after luring hungry, aspiring models into the backwoods of Columbus, Ohio, with a prize too good to be true. So does that...
The backwoods of Columbus, Ohio, by the way. Vast wilderness. Like, the backwoods of Columbus, Ohio are just like corn farms.
Yeah.
That's where Jason Voorhees is.
Well, that's true. But yeah, the backwoods are either corn farms on one side or Dayton on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. This is probably a mix of narrative storytelling and real backyard wrestling. But I bet it's all like Beelzebub level excruciating, of where it's just like, this should be fun in theory, but somehow they made it not fun. Like that, I feel like that's what I'd be saying the whole time I watched that.
Well, perhaps we'll find out on when it's school summer.
Yeah, if you can find a way to steal it, I'll watch a couple minutes of it. But
Kevin Moss signaling his interest over there.
Mm-hmm. I read you loud and clear, Kevin.
I like this.
Just don't spend $99 on it, whatever you do.
Actually, yeah. Well, I definitely don't have the money to spend $99 on it, because I just spent $160 on that new fucking Neil Breen movie.
Oh, Jesus Christ. The 5.5 hour long documentary about his filmic process.
Yep. So we're going to be watching that for Ghoul Summer as well.
Oh, excellent.
Sounds like you're going to be watching that by yourself.
Ghoul Summer is canceled. Oh, all right. I'm going to pick that's not too ghoulish, although who knows, actually. Carnival Magic's on Blu-ray this week. This is a Severin Films release. A 1981 film from Al Adamson. This is a movie that apparently started as a children's film, and then the end result somehow got filtered through Al Adamson's, you know, lens, and the end result had a bunch of sex and violence and drugs and stuff like that. But it's a, like I said, it's called Carnival Magic. It's about a magician in a carnival who can read minds and levitate people, who works with a super intelligent chimpanzee named Alex, who's able to speak. The talking chimp and the magician soon become the stars of the carnival. However, the wild animal trainer, who has been displaced by this team as the carnival's top act, decides to kidnap the pair and sell them to a medical laboratory for experimentation, thereby getting rid of his competition. I love carnival and circus kind of movies. There's another one, I think I maybe mentioned it on the show at some point, a 1981 TV movie on that was on NBC called Sideshow that I really like. But I've never seen this one. I actually had not heard of it before. Al Adamson's kind of an interesting guy. He did Dracula versus Frankenstein in 71. He did Satan's Sadist in 69. But I think the first thing I saw from him was that Jim Kelly blaxploitation movie, Black Samurai, from the late 70s.
Oh, yeah.
But an interesting director, and I had never even heard of this one. I guess it was apparently lost for a while, but it's coming out on Blu-ray now. Do you guys have any interest in this kind of weird, scary kind of carnival material? My guess is yes. And would you maybe be interested in doing another grip of these at some point? I know that we've done, you know, Ghoulies too. I know that we've done Freaks and stuff like that. But I could go for a carnival theme show at some point.
Yeah, well, you mentioned this. I mean, this is coming out as a single disc, but we talked a little bit off air. Also this week, Severin's putting out that huge Al Adamson box set, which is 32 fucking movies of his, all in one huge box for like $250, which looks awesome. I mean, the set looks really cool, and there's a ton of movies in there that I'm sure are all equally schlocky, but look really fun. Most of them I've never seen, but yeah, Al Adamson, like you said, had a very interesting career. He did a bunch of like sleazy stuff like Psycho Go-Go and The Female Bunch and Brain of Blood and stuff like that, Satan Sadist. And then all of a sudden he, towards the end of his career, decided to do a children's movie, which is this. Now, I have actually seen this movie.
Oh, really?
A couple iterations. They did come out with this on Blu-ray back in 2011. and I remember renting it from Netflix. And then in the last season of Mystery Science Theater 3000 with your boy, what's the new dude's name?
Jonah Ray.
Jonah Ray. They did this on the new season of Mystery Science Theater 3000, so you can watch it that way. But yeah, I'm sure Severin has done a better job than the 2011 Blu-ray release because that one looked pretty bad when I saw it. But yeah, it is bizarre. It's very weird. You know, I think one of the reasons that Severin's putting this out on its own is to, because we talked about with the Peanut Butter Solution, they now have their like children's sub label. So I think they're putting it out under that label. There's another title to their children's label, which I think is funny. Again, that Severin has a children's sub label. But yeah, it's weird and it's goofy and it's fun. I mean, it's a perfect movie for like a Mystery Science Theater 3000, and it seems like a lot of this guy's movies are. So yeah, if you're into that kind of stuff, you know, movies that you can kind of just riff on as you watch it, Carnival Magic is definitely a good choice for that. And it sounds like all of this guy's movies are. So yeah, I don't know if I see a good deal on that Al Adamson box set, I might scoop it up and then have 32 of his movies to choose from to torture you with in future episodes.
Very nice.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this, but I like a spooky carnival, and I like silly, creepy carnivals as well. They don't even necessarily have to be full-blown spooky. They can just be a little bit creepy. So,
How do you feel about scary concerts?
Man, you know I love those scary concerts. You know I take my girl to them.
And what do you think about a dark carnival?
I love them. I mean, you know I'm down with the clam.
All right. Well, while we ponder that philosophical thought, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to get into our first Patreon picked flick of the evening. And that is Supersonic Man from 1979, picked by Jeff P. So stick around.
Our phone number is 347-746-5865. Our phone number has always been 347-746-5865.
347-746-5865 is our phone number. 347-746-5865 has always been our phone number.
Jeff's down with the clown.
It wouldn't be.
Super soft.
We'll be right back. fuerza de las galaxias sea conmigo. Es ese maldito supersol. ¡A las armas! Veamos si están inmunes a los disparos, como dicen.
We must save the shipment. If anything happens to the iridium, old Gulick will blow his top.
You're right. We better go. This hulk is liable to go up in smoke any minute now. Go on. Keep firing. Move. Keep firing.
She's going down.
Stop the engine. Stop the engine.
There's not much time. Quick. The submarine.
Welcome back to Junk Fodge. Let's see. The first movie this week is Supersonic Man. This was picked by Jeff, I believe. And, yeah, Jeff picked this one. And this is a movie I've been wanting to watch for a long time. It's about Seattle Supersonics shooting guard Ray Allen. JK. I recycled that joke from my Letterboxd. It's not really about the Supersonics. In fact, this is a movie that's directed by Juan... Picor Simon. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, but you know him as the director of Slugs and Pieces, and those being two banger ass fucking movies that I love. I've been wanting to get into more of that guy's stuff. The sad part of it is that a lot of it is not widely available here in America, as he's a Spanish filmmaker, I think Spanish. And a lot of the stuff that I would find of his on the interwebs were either not subtitled or not dubbed or just not findable whatsoever outside of those.
Have you ever seen The Pod People? That's another one like Carnival Magic that got the Mystery Science Theater treatment.
No, is that by this guy?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with okay. Trumpy? With Trumpy?
Yeah, I know Trumpy. He did that movie?
Hell yeah, he did.
Okay, yeah. On Letterboxd, they have that listed as Extraterrestrial Visitors, so I did not even realize that was him.
That's the man.
Oh, okay. So another banger that he's done.
Well.
He also did this movie, Cthulhu Mansion, which has almost nothing to do with Cthulhu, but does have like a really cool like... refrigerator monster. So I tracked that one down, but he's got a handful of other ones that it seemed like they'll be hard to get. But yeah, I wanted to see this as it's his, and also it's a superhero movie from the 70s that is a very clear ripoff of Superman.
Yes.
Among
other things.
Yeah. But yeah, like in this world of the big like Zack Snyder DC movies and the Marvel movies and stuff, it's always quaint to go back and watch these movies that were superhero movies back before those kind of movies were made for like entire, like their budgets are entire like budgets of countries and stuff like that. And we've done a lot of those, like Steel and some other weird ones. But so I've been wanting to see this for a long time. It's been hard to track down, so I'm glad we finally got the chance to do it. In this, a masked superhero from outer space, played by Michael Coby, comes to Earth. He's just like kind of dropped off. Like, there's not really like, I mean, it's like very Superman inspired, but he's like this hunk of clay on a spaceship, and they're just like, hey, we're gonna drop you off on Earth, and you're gonna be invincible and fight crime or something. And then that's that. He has an alter ego. That I don't know, it's very Superman-y. I could probably just like read the plot of Superman, the movie, I guess. But one thing that distinguishes this from Superman is the fact that Cameron Mitchell, famed drunk actor, is the bad guy, who's more like James Bond villain almost than superhero villain. He's got like a death ray plot. He's got a ton of henchmen that are kind of cool looking. He's got evil robots with him. And yeah, there's like some sort of plot to this movie. I don't know. I couldn't really tell you the ins and outs of it. I know that Supersonic Man flies by the World Trade Center at one point, which is kind of spooky. There's a really rad bar fight where Supersonic Man is in his normal human form. He's there with a woman that he saves her from bad guys by lifting up a steamroller so that her car can go past on the road. And then he drops it down so that the bad guys are forced to swerve. And as soon as the bad guy's tires like touch a blade of grass off of the road, it just bursts into flames. Like they don't even wreck into anything. They just are on fire. So I like that. Also, the steamroller that he picks up is very clearly cardboard, and I like that as well. But the bar fight, anyway, he's there with the lady afterwards. And they're getting to know each other, and then there's another attack, and he just like starts like hauling off and like just beating the shit out of every single person in this bar, and it's like so goofy and silly, and there's like this bum trying to eat soup, you know, and he's like kind of like avoiding all the chairs being thrown and stuff, and I like him, and that bar fight's really super fun. And then like it gets cut short this fight because the police are coming. And then, like, all 35 people who are in this bar, like, just start running at the front doors. They're like, oh, my God, it's the police. And they all start leaving. And it's a lot like that scene in Cannibal the Musical where everybody runs out of the saloon and then, like, double back out of frame back through the back of the saloon so they can run out the front again. It reminded me of that, which I think is a very funny gag. Let's see. Supersonic Man. And in addition to being invincible, can also turn guns into bananas, which is a cool superpower.
Mm-hmm. Like my homeboy Banana Man.
Exactly. Which is another thing this rips off. Yet another thing this rips off is Star Wars, because in order to activate his powers, Supersonic Man must say the phrase, may the force of the galaxy be with you. So there's that. There's a lot of goofy flying scenes that are like very clearly green screened, and oftentimes the thing flying is not a man but a toy, and that's fun. And yeah, it's just like goofy and silly. They play the theme song like constantly throughout the film. There's a really cool scene where Cam Mitchell is like talking down to one of his henchmen. And he calls him an idiot, and then he takes a big swig of wine while looking at the guy in the eyes. And then when he's done taking a swig, he calls him an idiot again. And that's funny to me. I don't know. I thought this was fun. I mean, it's pretty incomprehensible. Like, it's real stupid and doesn't make sense, and all the effects are cheesy. And it's obviously ripping off Superman, but I don't know. It's cute. It's kind of fun. The effects are like so cheesy that they're endearing. And I mean, it's not too long of a movie. It's 88 minutes. If it was any longer than that, I probably would have turned on it. But because it does get a little bit dull when they try to pretend there's a plot, it gets a little bit dull and stuff. But whenever Supersonic Man's doing his thing, it's pretty fun. So what did you guys think about this movie?
Yeah, I had never heard of this movie before. And correct me if I'm wrong, this isn't based on like any existing property, right? There isn't like a DC or Marvel Supersonic Man, right?
As far as I know, that is correct, but I will look it up right now.
I don't think so either. But yeah, so, you know, like you mentioned, this is a Spanish-made movie, so it is all dubbed, which is the first thing you'll notice right away, is even though there are English-speaking actors, all of this movie is dubbed, and it looks super dubbed. And yeah, so that's a bit distracting. There are two different versions of this. We watched the U.S. version, and apparently in the Spanish version, there's a few notable differences, mainly that in the American one, the theme that you talked about, which is a total ripoff of the Superman theme, is just played over and over again, whereas in the Spanish version, they had a disco theme song in English about the Supersonic Man that was popular enough to warrant a 7-inch single, I see here. Now scouting out on eBay. But yeah, I got to hear this disco theme song for Supersonic Man, because that probably would have been a lot more enjoyable than this John Williams ripoff score that they put in the American version.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, I think in the Spanish version, he's just referred to as Supersonic, and I think the title is just Supersonic in the Spanish version, whereas they added the man part for the U.S., I think, just to make it more like Superman, maybe?
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, this is clearly just trying to get people who were hyped on Superman into the theaters, and apparently it worked in Spain, not so much in the United States. People saw through this shit. But yeah, it is, like you said, very quaint to see how far we've come with superhero movies from the time that this was released, because especially just even the way that they were treated. I mean, I think a lot of, you know, what we've seen with like these old Captain America movies from the 70s that we watched, and, you know, obviously things like the Incredible Hulk, is like up through the 80s, superhero stuff was taken not seriously whatsoever. I think the taint of Batman 66 had kind of just like lingered forever, where they felt like superhero stuff had to be very jokey and over the top. I mean, a lot of this stuff has, especially in this movie, has very cartoony elements to it. Like there's like those bad guys, like the one guy that stutters and the one guy who talks like a, you know, like a Brooklyn mouse in a cartoon, you know, like it's all very like cartoony, and like him picking up that steamroller and everything. It feels, you know, I think a lot of adults in the 70s couldn't distinguish between cartoons and comics. It all just felt like the same world to them. And so, you know, this feels very cartoony, and it copies a lot from those Superman movies, which were a step in the right direction, I guess, in terms of getting superhero movies a little bit more serious. But even those, even go back and watch his old Superman movies, there's a lot hokey about those and very cartoony and stuff. And, you know, obviously this on a lower budget coming from Spain and not Hollywood is even more so. But, you know, I think there's stuff that is enjoyable about this. If you can kind of sit back and watch this, like it's a good Saturday afternoon watch. You know, there's that robot in it. That's mm-hmm. cool. There's, you know, some, like you said, the suit is obviously very silly. The flying scenes are very cheesy. And yeah, just the general plot feels very hokey. But nevertheless, like I said, there's some fun stuff in it. I mean, the best you get as far as special effects are, like you said, those flying scenes, or the scene where he's like the film sped up to make him run really fast so he can deliver like the protagonist's dad to the hospital on time. Like, it's all just very cheesy, but, you know, in a fun sort of way. So like I said, if you can kind of turn your brain off and and sit back and enjoy this like you would maybe in an episode of, you know, The Adventures of Electra Woman and Dinah Girl or something, you know, some other cheesy 70s superhero stuff. I think you could enjoy this if you can get past the dubbing and the constant, you know, ripoffs of more popular things. But yeah, this is fun.
So, Kevin Moss, you're telling me that you weren't impressed by the special effects wherein the supersonic man, like, waves his arms around and then a door magically opens in front of him?
I mean, that is a pretty cool superpower that I think we wish we all had.
I know, it's incredible. I didn't know anything about this. I liked pieces, you know, a pretty good deal, but I don't think I ever noticed this on IMDb before or anything. I actually thought we were going to be watching Super Inframan for most of the week, and we had already done that for the show, so that would have been weird. But yeah, when I started watching this, I was kind of instantly charmed by it, to be honest with you guys. The goofiness in this, I thought, was pretty damn charming right from the get-go. And, you know, they are, in this version that we watched, using that John Williams song to, or, you know, fake John Williams song to open it up, but even that was kind of charming in the way that it's like kind of off time and off pitch. And it's like the attempt here is so charming that I can enjoy it, you know, whether or not they fully realize their goals.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be more charming if it was a Spanish disco hit?
Probably. And I'm also going to be bidding on eBay. So look out for me, Kevin Moss. I might have to snipe you. Yeah,
I was disappointed that they never used the JJ Fad song Supersonic, even though that didn't come out till a few years after this. But nevertheless, they could have, you know, added in retroactively.
Well, we all know how remakes are faring in Hollywood these days. Maybe if Kevin Moss pitches Supersonic Man around town, we can get this green lit. but who knows? For this week, we did watch a high def version of this. I'm not sure if it was like from a Blu-ray or some kind of streaming service, or I don't know where the hell we got this thing, but it, you know, had a relatively high pixel count. And I will say that the temptation is kind of to say that the HD remaster here is a mixed bag, because within the very first scene of this film, you got this guy who's going to be the supersonic man, and he's just kind of laying on this operating table in a Speedo. And you see a lot of his pubic hairs, and like it's this is way before CGI assisted digital pube technology. Like, these are actual pubic hairs. And so I'm thinking, like, this is, you know, maybe a little bit more than I bargained for in terms of pixels. But as soon as that motherfucker puts that suit on and you can see all the stitches on it, you know, on the costume, and see how clumsily it was put together, I thought it was charming as hell, you know. And for the most of the runtime, he stays fully clothed. So yeah, it's one of those things where I think if I had seen this, and we might talk about this a little bit later with another movie, but if I had seen this in a lower quality version, I might not appreciate it as much. I think a lot of the charm here and a lot of the fun is just kind of taking in the homemade, you know, vibe to the production and these homemade effects and costumes. And like, there's a very obvious toy helicopter that they use in one scene. The robot guy in this is just, you know, it's a dude walking around in this sheet metal costume that looks like a child's toy from the 1950s. But I love it. You know, I love that shit. And the scene where they use that robot to light an entire bedroom on fire looked exceptionally dangerous. You know, I wouldn't be shocked to learn if they had melted a camera lens or two shooting that thing. That robot's cool. And the fact that it's all, you feel a little bit of wobbliness to the production, I don't know, for me, kept things exciting. Maybe you less.
Even heard a little bit of wobbliness in the soundtrack from time to time. Like, totally. It would be like,
yeah, like, totally.
I feel like you're watching a, yeah, like you said, kind of like a bad print in a dirty theater, which is probably where you should see this anyway.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, it's not all, not everything in this is a winner. Like, it's, and some of it you kind of laugh along with, I guess some of it you kind of laugh at. Like, less dangerous than that bedroom sequence where the robot's just lighting everything on fire, like within inches of, you know, the living human actors. You know, there's a scene later on where they have to blow up a truck. And, you know, they do it this way where they just, you know, they show a shot of a truck and then they just cut directly to a shot of an explosion where the truck used to be. Like, it's, and it's so clear that the truck is gone, you know, that they've set up an entirely new shot. You know, it's like 3 hours later, the sun has moved. But I love that stuff. And sometimes it legitimately succeeds, I think. Like, this has got to be a super low budget movie, but I'll say the space effects in this look better than most, you know, movies today with their dumb CG space effects. I'll take these cool little models that some dude in Spain, you know, was painting in his garage all night long. They look pretty fucking cool. And there's like this rainbow colored explosion at the very end that they play three times in a row, which you would think playing, you know, a 1.5 second long clip of an explosion three times in a row would be ridiculous, but it looks cool. And I didn't mind. I honestly didn't even mind that this was the second movie in a row that I had watched this week for the show that opens with a Star Wars scene. Like this much like Arena that we'll talk about later on, it opens with like 15 minutes of Star Wars. I was cool with it because, you know, I mean, at least this is kind of contemporary to Star Wars. It came out around the same time, unlike Arena. And it looks cool. I don't know. I love that old space stuff. I love that food fight in the New York City dive bar. I love that old guy that you mentioned that they keep doing random cutaways to, you know, during the fight. He's just sitting at the bar, just laughing and being super old. I thought that guy was cool. And that dive bar itself, like, I'm guessing that they built that in Spain because, like, they did do some exteriors in New York. Like, whenever there's like the it's a bird, it's a plane, you know, look up in the sky kind of moment, they have somebody standing out in front of some kind of New York City landmark to let you know, yeah, we had the budget to, like, you know, fly two people to New York with a camera and shoot a few quick things on the sidewalk. But that, I think that they probably built in Spain, because if you look behind the bar, there's all this signage from Burger King. There's all these Burger King logos and signs in this bar, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I noticed that. It was really weird. There's like a big poster for like the Whopper. Like, I assume that that's probably just them like thinking like all American bars are also Burger Kings or something.
Yeah, I think it's the same kind of logic that like led them to put like a can of Coca-Cola or like Miller High Life in every scene. Like, there's all this like product placement to be like, we're in America, don't forget, you know, we got the American drinks. But I love that stuff. And I mean, overall, this thing is just kind of like, it's like good old fashioned psychotronic fun. You know, this is like a Saturday morning cereal bowl after an acid trip kind of movie. It's just kind of weird and colorful and quick and chipper, and it gives you the feeling that, like, and I've kind of felt this before when we've watched like things like the Mexican luchador movies or like the Turkish superhero movies. Like, I feel like foreign countries somehow like have access to colors that we haven't yet discovered in America. Like, there's a different palette to these things that is very specific and very charming. And I had a really good pizza while I watched this, and honestly didn't care what time period it was. Like, throughout this movie, I kept like forgetting that it was supposed to be, I think, the present 1979 New York, but there's stretches of this where you can be confused into thinking it's the future or that you're in outer space, or none of it makes any sense. Like, towards the end, there's like this fortress that Supersonic Man invades where the James Bond villain is. And it, like, does this thing, and maybe they cribbed this from a Bond movie. I haven't really seen many of them. They do this thing where, like, a room turns from lava into ice, like, instantly, which I thought was kind of cool. But, again, doesn't make any sense. So, this was charming. I mean, it's total nonsense. But if you like things like the Batman TV show or, like, those, you know, Luchador movies that I mentioned, you probably already seen this. You probably already riff-tracked this at home. But if not, yeah, this is fun, dude.
Excellent. We're in agreement about the Supersonic Man. Also, if you really like the Supersonic Man, I also suggest checking out the Oklahoma Thunder, the sequel.
Okay.
It's a basketball joke.
I think I've just changed my opinion on this film.
Oh no, not a big OKC fan. Okay, well, I guess that wraps it up for this. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about some other kind of stuff. Stick around.
From Guayaquil, Ecuador, Central America, the fourth World Cup Swimming Championships, the highest honors a water sportsman can aspire for in the disciplines of swimming, diving, synchronized swimming, and water polo. The fourth World Cup Swimming Championships, featuring competitors from 57 countries including Japan, Korea, Indonesia, Singapore, and the People's Republic of China. The fourth World Cup Swimming Championships, this September, a special sports development spectacular on Leader 9.
Have you missed a lot of movies? Well, I have. It's a good thing this show is coming up on Channel 9. Every Sunday from 3:30 to 5:30 in the afternoon. Let's watch for it, okay?
Racing in the shadows, pounding out the feet. Well, the old man gets a brain, and the children try to sleep. Just another promise, they don't really care. Cause the movement on the borders got the people running scared. Standing on the corner, never got things done. Leave your front door open, you'd be the foolish one.
Jungle, an urban skyline of fear, waiting, watching, destroying. You're not safe anymore to walk the streets when every hour 163 more people become victims of assault. You live at the mercy of the animals who inhabit the streets of every city, people who place little value on their lives and even less on yours. You live in a country where 12 women are raped every minute, where 65 people are murdered each day. It's happening now. It's happening this minute. The police are powerless. The law is corrupt. And the courts turn them loose.
I figure that's the answer.
That's my judge and my jury.
There is only one alternative. It's time to take a stand. Because time is running out. You're not safe anymore. Their numbers are growing. And you must wage a war to eliminate the problem. Yourself. Vigilante.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner. The next movie we're going to be doing on the show this evening is Vigilante from 1982, picked by Andreas. This is a movie that I had never seen before, but that's why I picked it this week when I saw Andreas's recommendation, as it was a hole that I wanted to fill. I was aware of this movie because it is directed by none other than William Lustig, who is the Maniac Man. Not the Memphis Maniac, but he is the man that directed the original Maniac from 1980 and then went on to direct three Maniac Cop movies, Maniac Cop from 1988, Maniac Cop 2 from 1990, and Maniac Cop 3, Badge of Silence from 92. He also did the Uncle Sam movie from 1996, which you might remember for that sweet lenticular video box art. But in between Maniac and Maniac Cop, he took a break from the Maniac titles to do Vigilante. And it's one that, you know, judging by the title, I feel like I already knew the whole story. But, you know, it's got a cool cast and it's got a cool premise. But if you're not familiar, Vigilante is about a dude named Eddie Marino, played by Robert Forrester. He works in a factory in NYC. He works with a few dudes like Fred Williamson and a couple other guys. And, you know, they're just regular New York tough guys working in a factory. But we soon find out, you know, the movie opens up with an assault on a woman by a classic early 80s New York thug. And as you usually see in these types of movies, the police are less than helpful. You know, they're overwhelmed in a big city like New York. And of course, the crime rate in the 70s and early 80s was out of control, and they just were understaffed and couldn't do anything, and a lot of times turned, you know, an indifferent eye to the plight out there. So we find out that Fred Williamson and a couple of his buddies from work have started this kind of little vigilante crew where they go around and with the aid of, you know, the neighborhood, find out these guys who are perpetrating crimes around the neighborhood, and then kick them in the balls and beat the shit out of them with baseball bats and let them know that scum like that isn't welcome in their neighborhood. Robert Forrester isn't part of this gang of vigilantes, but obviously he's friends with all these dudes at work. But when his wife and son are assaulted by ruthless gang members in their own home after an altercation at a gas station, where the wife is sliced up with a knife, but not killed, but hospitalized. But their young son does not fare so well. He hides in the bathtub, only to be blown away by a shotgun blast from one of these gang members in a very over-the-top and kind of disturbing scene. But what would you expect from Bill Lustig, the man from Maniac? And so, obviously, Robert Forrester is devastated at the news of his wife's attack and the death of his son. And again, he tries to work with the police. But when they go to trial against the guy who they've busted for who leads the gang and led the break-in, when he gets a mere slap on the wrist of a 2-year sentence and then gets that, you know, suspended, Robert Forrester goes nuts in the courtroom, so much so that he tries to attack the judge, and for that outburst, in a complete role reversal, the thug goes free and he gets sent up for a 30-day bid in jail. And so for the good chunk of the middle part of the movie, we just get to see Robert Forrester trying to protect his butthole in prison, while it's interspliced with scenes of Fred Williamson and the crew still doing their thing, kicking ass and taking names on the streets of New York City, trying to clean it up from the young thugs that are dealing dope, pimping ladies, and generally causing, you know, a bad scene. But then, of course, when Robert Forrester gets out of jail, he is a hardened man, and he wants in on the vigilante crew to get revenge on the men that sliced up his wife and killed his kid, and that's exactly what they do. You know, so this came out in 1983. This is almost a full 10 years after Death Wish, but obviously, just like Freak Maker and Freaks, it's impossible not to make the comparison, because, you know, anytime you've got, you know, a dude in the hard crime-ridden streets, you know, with his family has been attacked and he's looking for revenge, you know, it's basically the Death Wish blueprint. And, you know, there were a few of these types of movies between the mid-70s and early 80s, and this one was a little late to the game. Like I said, 1983, you're already, you know, 9 years past the original Death Wish, and obviously Death Wish had its fair share of sequels as well coming out during that time frame. But this does feel very much in vain with that. I feel like Bill Lustig, after doing Maniac, decided, well, maybe I'll do one that has the same kind of level of intense violence, but not from the, you know, Maniac's point of view, but a vigilante kind of thing. And I think it works pretty well. I mean, despite the fact that it is taking a lot from the Death Wish blueprint, not really doing too much new with it. You know, it does have a cool cast. I mean, the fact that Robert Forrester's in here is great. You've got Fred Williamson leading the vigilante crew, which kind of takes a little bit of the the racist edge off some of these other vigilante movies, where it does feel like it's just white guys wanting to go out and shoot black and Puerto Rican guys. But, you know, and these movies all did at the time, you know, have kind of some right wing tendencies and still do. And, you know, it's just part of the game with these vigilante movies. But again, they all kind of also play out like pure fantasy, where a lot of the stuff would never really happen in real life. But besides Robert Forster and Fred Williamson, you've got some cool appearances here. You've got Joe Spinell. I mean, it wouldn't be a Bill Lustig movie without Joe Spinell, the maniac himself. He plays Eisenberg, the sleazy defense attorney for the gang member during the court scenes. You've got a couple other recognizable faces throughout this, and the guys that are playing the gang members are suitable for, you know, like I said, early 80s New York City thugs. They look like they could fit in any Death Wish or Warriors movie just fine. But yeah, I mean, this is, you know, if you like gritty, like I said, tail end of kind of grindhouse movies, New York City is the gritty, gang-ridden streets of things like Tenement, like we did a couple weeks ago. I think you will enjoy this. I mean, if you like the Death Wish stuff, this is definitely in the same vein. And if you like Bill Lustig's other stuff like Maniac and Maniac Cop, but have not gotten around to Vigilante like I hadn't, I think it's worth checking out. It doesn't do a whole lot new with it, so it's not, you know, not a major one that you need to seek out right away. But like I said, if you haven't seen it before and you like this kind of gritty New York City vigilante type movies, definitely worth a watch. But what did you guys think of Vigilante?
Yeah, I love the Death Wish movies, all of them, you know, even if they get progressively less convincing as Bronson enters, you know, elder statesman status, I guess we'll put it gracefully. Love all those. Love Maniac Cop 1 and 2. Love Maniac. Was hyped to see this because I had seen the trailer for this at the Beverly a couple times, and I had known about this for a while, but just had never gotten around to sitting down and watching it. And I'm glad that I did. Pretty much agree with everything that you said. You got a great cast here. You know, Joe Spinell is an absolute treasure in pretty much any role, large or small. Robert Forster, who I'm sure we've talked about many times on the show, just continues to impress me. Like anytime I see him in something, I always love him. He's got this quiet, kind of matter-of-fact quality to him. He's got this working-class vibe that's like, in this movie, kind of reminded me of De Niro in the Deer Hunter a little bit. And he's really, for me, him and Fred Williamson are the reason a movie like this works, where a movie like Tenement kind of failed for me. Is you need, if you're going to do some kind of, you know, tough street gang kind of, I need some kind of an anchor. I need somebody that I'm rooting for, somebody likable. And Forster is completely likable in this. You know, I love his outburst in the courtroom. You really feel for the guy. Fred Williamson, also very good. You know, in this, I feel like he's doing some stuff that is slightly more dramatic and a little bit less cartoonish than some of the stuff I'm more used to seeing, you know, him do. And it was cool to see him stretch a little bit in this. Even if this is a schlocky kind of movie, there are moments of, like, at least kind of, from the way it's acted, you know, it can be a little bit dramatic at times. Like there's this speech that Fred Williamson gives at some point in this movie to Robert Forster about, you know, how they got to fight to take back their homes and take back these streets. And I found it to be, I mean, compelling on one hand, although I will say maybe that was like the one scene where this feels like it kind of veers into that territory of like almost being like designed to directly incite actual street justice from the moviegoers. Like, and that's something that I think people accused Death Wish of. And ultimately there was like that guy, Bernard Goetz or something, I think his name was, the guy, the subway shooter, who said that he was inspired by Death Wish or whatever. But this movie really goes for it, where they're like, spoiler, I guess, for the end. But in the end, there's like no consequences for the vigilantes. And it's crazy, like the way that the end just wraps everything up real quickly. Me and my wife were laughing at the TV at like how neat and clean everything wraps up. And the fact that Robert Forster is like suddenly some kind of, you know, remote controlled bomb expert, like he's been working for the CIA in secret or something. It's very weird.
Well, again, not to spoil anything from the ending, but when he was using that remote control, I'm pretty sure it's the same remote control they show him using at the beginning of the movie with the remote control plane that he was, you know, flying with his son. And so I thought when he busts out the remote that he was going to, like, fly his, like, you know, remote control plane into the car or something. But, yeah, he just goes full, you know, mafia style with it. But, yeah, and then – but speaking of going full force, I love the fact that, you know, I talked about how Bill Lustig, you know, has the little kid get blown away with the shotgun and stuff. But at the end, there's a guy that gets tossed off a bridge.
Gets tossed off?
Yeah. You know, turns into cruising for a little while. There's just a guy getting tossed off in the background. But, no, a guy gets thrown off a, you know, a platform. And while most filmmakers would just show the guy get tossed off and then be done with it, Bill Lustig goes the extra mile of showing the guy's brains coming out of his skull.
Yeah, dude, this guy got brained.
I like that extra touch.
Yeah, that was gnarly. And there's a lot of that. Like, you know, when a guy in this movie will shoot at one of these thugs on the street, you don't just get your typical kind of shotgun blast. It's like this slow-mo, like Peckinpah-esque, like cascade of blood across the screen. And I thought all the stylization of violence in this was cool. I mean, I guess if Michael Haneke could hear this review, I'm sure he would be furious with me. But I thought the violence in this looked cool, man. You know, and it works. The music in this is also really cool. There's some tense moments. Like there's that scene in the backyard where they have all the sheets hanging up on the clotheslines, and they do this kind of Halloween Michael Myers thing where one of the killers pops out from the sheets. I thought that was fucking cool. There is like a weird blue tone to most of this movie where it looks like it was like maybe shot in between rain showers on like a late autumn day in New York or something. And that's kind of a bummer that everything's a little bit grayed out, but otherwise things look pretty good. And like I mentioned before, a little bit unbalanced with the ending, silly at times, like the lack of justice in New York City circa 82, 83, whatever, is like preposterous in this movie. I guess that is kind of a reflection of how people felt, especially probably minorities and working class people in the early 80s really felt like they were being squeezed. And so it's, you know, it stands to reason that they would try and represent that here, but it's very over the top. But I mean, ultimately, I think you're asking me, like, do I want to watch like a Death Wish 2.5 starring Robert Forster and Fred Williamson? And the answer is yes. Like, I'll watch this all day long. This is cool.
Give me one sec. Let me let my cat out real quick.
Sure. There is that one scene in this that's kind of like a darker / sillier version of the Zoolander gasoline party. I thought that was kind of a weird inclusion.
Right.
A lot of great locations in this, too. There's like that cool abandoned public swimming pool that the jail that Forster goes to is all run down and cool looking. There's that dive bar in this, the Velvet Cup, it's called, which I looked up online, and there's a website that I think called ForgottenNewYork.com that says the building still stands. It's been replaced by multiple businesses over the years. But if you go out to 162nd Street in Flushing, you can find the Velvet Cup building from Vigilante. So if you're out there, send me a scene report.
I agree with everything you guys have said. This movie rules. I've never seen it before. In fact, this is my first Lustig movie that I've ever seen.
Oh, what? You've never seen any of those Maniacs?
I've never seen any Maniacs.
Have we not done any of them?
We have not.
That's very weird.
I don't know how soon you guys want to book a Maniac Cop trilogy themed show, but I would be very willing to watch all of those. But this guy has the best names for his movies. Maniac, Maniac Cop, Vigilante. You know what you're going to get. And I love that about him. What was that?
He said Uncle Sam.
Uncle Sam as well. Maybe some of his later stuff doesn't quite fit that bill. But you know, I've seen the poster for this quite a few times. And like between the poster and the title, like you already know It's a banger. Like, you really, I mean, maybe that's why I've never seen this movie, is because, like, you don't have to see it. Like, you just look at the poster with that title, with Fred Williamson, Robert Forster, you know it's good. Like, you kind of just don't even need to see it. Like, I could have just logged this on Letterboxd and given it the 4 or 4.5 stars that it deserves, and that could have been that. But I'm glad I did see it, because it rules. It kind of feels like, I mean, like, it's very, like you said, Death Wishy, but I feel like there's, like, it kind of expands. Well, maybe it doesn't. I mean, Death Wish does a good job of that too, but it, like, this kind of really feels like sort of like a grimy ass Death Wish version of, like, The Wire or something, because you're seeing how the system has broken down. Like, you see it in the jail, you see it in the courtroom, you see it with the judge, the cops, the gangs, normal people. You know, it's not just like just Paul Kersey and his grief and stuff, how it turns to anger. And I mean, they touch upon, like, he, you know, he makes a lot of monologues and stuff about, like, society and the things going on in society. But, and he talks to, like, that guy out in Arizona about shit a lot. But in this, you kind of really see how everything's just kind of broken down, and one thing breaking down contributes to this other thing breaking down. And before you know it, you got dudes, their brains falling out and shit all over town. And I think that's cool. Like you said, Kevin, I like the Fred Williamson's the leader of the vigilantes in this, because it does kind of get rid of that aspect of it's, you know, Bronson going after a bunch of people of color, and also Jeff Goldblum. and so I like that they've kind of, like, taken that out of it to some degree in this movie. And also, like, Fred Williamson's just, like, so great in this. Like, he's so, like, he has, like, so much authority that you, like, if he was, like, there's a, you know, at the beginning, he's kind of making his kind of making this speech about what they're going to do. And it's very reminiscent of, like, the Warriors, like, that beginning speech, like, the Can You Dig It speech. But him kind of, Fred Williamson kind of riling up his dudes to go be vigilantes. And if I had heard that in real life, I would have picked up, like, a baseball bat and I would just be a vigilante from now on. He has so much, like, gravitas and authority in his performance that I think it really works. Forster rules. It was weird to see him as a young. I don't think I've ever seen him as a young. He's always been like an old broken down piece of meat and everything I've seen him in. So I like that. I do like all those scenes where he has to protect his butthole.
Squirrel Master saves him a couple times.
Exactly. So there's that. So between him having to protect his own butthole and the horrible things that happen earlier in the film, in decade two of Junk Food Dinner, Kevin, your sex crimes count is up to 12 sex crimes already.
I know, dude. It is wild. Week by week, I'm wondering, what sexual thrills is Kevin Moss going to throw my way? And this week, I was shocked.
And that's not counting Freak Maker. I think there might have been one in there, but I didn't keep tracking that one. So you get a freebie, Kevin. But we're up to 12.
So, all right.
So, you know. the year is young still. You pace yourself. The little kid, when he's hiding from the gang, he has that cool poster on his wall, Pig Mania. He's got all these pigs doing cool activities, and I like that. The little kid, you know, I hate to say it, but he definitely deserved to get shot, because he did a real shitty job of hiding. He goes upstairs and he hides in the shower. But he's backlit, so you can clearly see his outline against the shower curtain. If he would have just, like, ducked down a tiny little bit, he would have lived. Also, his mom also decided she deserved it too, because she gets free from the gang and just runs outside, leaving her kid in the building. So I don't know what her plan was, but she just left that little kid to die. So I guess she deserves it too. Although, I mean, what can you do to save him? Just save a stupid little kid like that.
I think coming to find out that if, you know, these gang members had targeted the Bowman household, you know, instead, they wouldn't have had to worry about any kind of vigilante action.
Well, I guess that's true.
You would have thanked them on the way out.
Well, I mean, you know, if people were hiding in dumb places, I would have, you know, I would have asked the gangs. I would have been
what if Kepi didn't think to, you know, duck down into the bathtub? You're telling me just anybody can walk in and shotgun old Kepi in the face?
Well, luckily, Kepi's about 4 inches tall, so he's very good at hide and seek. Yes. I think he could have gotten out of it alive.
It's an evolutionary trait.
Exactly. So there's that. But yeah, I mean, everything else in this movie rules. I mean, everything rules. That part's rules. I mean, it's, you know, I'm making yuck 'em ups and stuff, but that part's obviously very disturbing when the mom's outside and she looks up and the glass explodes into blood on the second floor. It's grimy. It's a grimy movie. So yeah, I'm into this, and I would love to watch any of these Lustig movies.
Very nice. Yeah, we'll definitely, now that you've brought that to my attention, that we've never done any of these Maniacs or Maniac Cops, we gotta rectify that soon. So it's not going to help my sex crimes count, but no, I'll do it for the show.
Yep. I appreciate that.
All right, well, on that note, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to get into our final Patreon-picked movie of the evening, and that is Arena from 1989, picked by Mickey, so stick around.
Kills cockroaches. Needs a lung of spray. Dead cockroaches every day. Day after day, you need a broom to sweep them away. Protection. Walang kasing husay.
The sugar in your coffee is the sugar in your soft drink. The sugar for chemical. The sugar for alcohol gas. The cheap energy fuel. The same sugar that provides income for people. Earns dollars and profits to keep our economy growing. This is the sugar that Republic Planters Bank helps to plant, harvest, refine, market at home, and export abroad. So, the next time you put sugar in your coffee, think of Republic Planters Bank. We make sugar work for you.
Erwin Yablans, producer of Halloween, promises the future will be filled with deadly fun and games in Arena.
Step in the arena, cheetah. You're gonna be amazed when you gaze at the armor on this leader, fully clad and glad to fight a cause. I won't pause. Fear is a joke, slowpoke. I'm like claws that'll rip, cause your gift is merely flesh, superficial, and I wish you would give it a rest. But if you don't, I'll unsheath my Excalibur like a noble knight. So meet your challenger, a true hero, while you're a true zero. Getting beat to a pulp so that you can't run for help. I heard a gulp in your throat, cause you hope that I'll be merciful. But poof, but the major strut as I rehearse a few battle drills and watch your bladder spill. Yellow fluid, check how I mellowly do it. Face to feet, to this beat, you can tell I'm into it. As I'm pulling out my lance to kill you in advance through the winner's throne. Cause I own you once you step in the arena.
Welcome to my world.
The arena. The arena. The arena.
In the arena,
we've been saying for years,
or rather Colosseum, these people gathering by multitudes to see one perpetrator fall to the dust after the other, quickly disposed of at the hand of a known brother, born with an art in his heart that is Spartacus, and one-to-one combat jack, just the thought of this matchup makes gangsta want to snatch up one or two phrases from the new book with new pages of rhymes that are built like a chariot, dope vocals carry it to the battle, said if a beat was a princess, I would marry it, but now I must bow to the crowd as I stand proud, victorious, glorious, understand now, cause battles and wars and much fights I have been through, one MC got beheaded, and you can too, forget it, cause you'd rather be just a spectator or onlooker, afraid you may get slayed or struck by a blow from a mighty gladiator. I bet you that later you might be sad that you played yourself, cause you stepped up, chest puffed out, and in just one lyric, you got snuffed out, cause rhyming is serious. I'm strong, I'm like Hercules. You'll get hurt with these lines, close the curtains, please. The suckers can jet, cause I wreck once you step in the arena.
A test of courage.
I can do it.
It ain't gonna work, this guy's a
fool.
A battle for glory.
They're calling for you.
Yeah! Believe in you.
You will go right to the top. A struggle for power.
You will work.
So funny.
A game of
fight to the death.
Now we kill him.
A test of courage.
It ain't gonna work. This guy's a
human.
A battle for glory.
Forum. We can seize, I will floor him, causing mayhem, I'll slay them, and the blood will be pouring. Furthermore, I implore that as a soldier of war, I go in only to win and be the holder of more. Trophies, titles, and triumphs, cause I dump all the sly jumps, never choosing to lose my spot, not once. For the mere idea of an opponent that I fear is foolish utterly. I mean, what nut it be? Trying to toy with a destroyer of many? You skidded your pants cause you can't think of any. Foes that can step to this concept, so you better sit against citizen. We can seize, I get rid of them. Watch the way they get distraught when they get caught in the worst positions, cause they didn't listen and tried going Arena. Up against a hungry killer who's hitching to maim and murder those who claim that they were the toughest Arena. Ones. They get done once they step in the arena.
Arena.
No human has got the guts to fight in the arena.
And now, a sneak preview of upcoming video cassette releases.
On the edge of our galaxy, there is a battle where alien warriors compete for the ultimate prize.
I am champion!
Will a human do battle in the arena? Now where is the challenger?
Where humans have lost.
You ever thought about the arena, Steve?
It ain't gonna work. This guy's a human.
What it takes to win.
Talking about arena fighting. It's not for me.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner. The final Patreon picked movie on the show tonight is going to be Arena from 1989. This was picked by Mickey, and it was directed by a guy named Peter Manoogian, I guess you'd say. He's a guy that directed some other Charles Band productions like Seed People, like Demonic Toys, the Cave Beast segment of Rage War. But this is one of his things that I had never seen before. I saw it on the list of Patreon picks, checked it out on Google Images, and saw a bunch of pictures of like these weird demon-looking aliens like doing some kind of cage fights, it looked like to me. And that seemed like kind of the coolest shit ever. So I figured this movie would have to try real hard to fuck that up, and I threw this on my picks list. And, you know, when I started this movie, I actually didn't even know that this was a Charles Band production, didn't know that this was an Empire picture. But when I found that out, it excited me because, you know, as much as I've kind of disliked a lot of the Full Moon stuff that we've done, I've been kind of fond of the Empire stuff. So I was excited to see how this would turn out. Let's talk about the plot. It is set in the year 4038. Wow, that's really far in the future. I don't think I realized that until I just looked at the plot description here. Wow. In this year, generic dude Paul Satterfield plays a character named Steve Armstrong. He's the first human in 50 years to compete in this intergalactic fighting sport simply called the Arena. And that's pretty much it. The fighting is like a pre-UFC sort of like sumo-inspired kind of thing where you're trying to push like a giant alien monster or like a big robot out of this ring. And so we follow this hero, this unlikely hero, Steve Armstrong, on his quest to train and perhaps ultimately defeat Horn, this devilish looking alien guy who's the current champion of the arena, this guy Horn. So that's cool. Besides Steve Armstrong and Horn, you got Hamilton Camp playing a character named Shorty. He's kind of like an Obi-Wan Kenobi figure, and he's also kind of like a Yoda figure. He's like this little guy who just kind of follows our hero around and gives him sage-like advice and all this shit. Then you got a Playboy playmate, Claudia Christian, who you might remember from movies like The Hidden, Maniac Cop 2, aforementioned, also A Gnome Named Norm and The Dark Backward, and maybe least surprisingly, Babylon 5. She's in this as Quinn, the manager of various fighters, but most importantly, Steve Armstrong. So she's kind of showing him how the arena stuff works. Then you got Mark Alamo as Rogor, the casino owner and manager of Horn, and kind of like the underworld boss. Another Playboy playmate, Sherry Shattuck, star of Death Spa, she's in this. She plays the girlfriend of Rogor, the casino owner, and she's kind of like a nightclub singer or something like that. Ends up kind of getting in a romantic tryst with our hero, Steve Armstrong, at a certain point. So anyways, that's the plot of this thing. Plot of this thing doesn't really matter. You came to this for alien fights, and it kind of delivers on that. Before you get to the fights, you get another Star Wars opening, like we mentioned, you know, much like Supersonic Man. Like 15 minutes of Star Wars, and despite this being like 10 years after, Supersonic Man somehow looks way worse. And 1989 is pretty late for like so many elements of this movie to be lifted from Star Wars. Even though Suburban Commando, I guess, would do it a couple years after this, it's pretty wild. Like there's a long extended cantina sequence in this. Like I said, that Shorty guy is this weird Obi-Wan plus yogurt kind of combo. He also has four arms for some reason, but it's really more of like an afterthought where like you can go through long stretches of this movie forgetting that this kind of the second build character in this is a four-armed man, even though he's in pretty much every scene. It's just it's done so poorly that the arms more often than not are just kind of outside of frame. So that's cool. Later, he also kind of turns into like the Burgess Meredith character from Rocky. So kind of a fun character, to be honest, this Shorty, even if he is like an amalgamation of like every other character you've seen in movies. The big problem with this, though, is there's not enough fights. You get like a little bit of fighting at the beginning, kind of like your intro into this arena world where they show you just like a little glimpse of it. And then like the first actual fight is like 40 minutes into this thing. And it's a fun fight. It's, you know, it's Armstrong versus this big insect monster. I thought it was pretty cool looking. But then that's pretty much it until the very end of the movie. You know, in between, you get these little montages of quick little fights, you know, like one punch little fights and some training and stuff like that. And they do that kind of romantic triangle subplot that I alluded to. I will say that when they do introduce the romantic triangle subplot kind of thing, where Armstrong is getting seduced by, you know, the girlfriend of the evil Horn manager guy, she's living in this apartment, this like space apartment that's full of water fountains and like silver panels and crystal everything. And it looks like a vaporwave album come to life. And I would totally space quarantine myself in that apartment. I thought it was sick. But other than that, I don't know, like a lot of this movie, you can't see shit. Like it's very dark. It feels like there's just like a spark that's missing from this. And I wish that it had some of the charm of like a Supersonic Man or some kind of goofiness in this, but a lot of it feels like it's just kind of, I don't know, downbeat and hard to make out. And like, there are a ton of cool aliens in this potentially, maybe, I'm not sure. Like there's a lot of aliens, like there pretty much every scene has a new alien or two. But you can't really see them. And I guess the ones that you can see kind of range from like C plus to F design wise. So maybe I'm being generous when I say that there's a ton of great aliens in this. There is like a bug-eyed Rango lizard man who kind of ogles this holographic stripper in the cantina. I thought he looked decent. And there's like a space Neil Hamburger telling jokes over there in that nightclub as well, and that was kind of fun. But to be honest, I spent a lot of this movie just kind of like musing on whether or not Robert Forster would have been able to take out the street gang if they had Star Wars style laser guns. And I came to the conclusion that it would be very tough because laser guns are fucking effective, dude. Like, you can shoot through anything with those. A lot of the dialogue was kind of muddy. I don't know. Something about the production values in this just felt unnerving to me. And it reminded me of like that feeling that I would have as a kid when I would like walk through a friend's living room or, you know, later in my 20s, a roommate might be playing something like Battlestar Galactica or Deep Space Nine or Babylon 5. And those shows just always gave me a headache, and this thing kind of gave me a headache. But I don't know. This is for somebody. Like, if you saw this as a kid, you probably would continue to enjoy this to this day. And I see on Letterboxd now that it does have one fan, officially, one fan on Letterboxd. So that guy probably saw this as a kid. But yeah, I mean, if you're in the mood to see, like, a space boxing Luke Skywalker played by a fake Dolph Lundgren in Speedos punch rubber suited men for 90 minutes and your subscription to Pornhub Premium has run out, you could probably watch this thing. But maybe wait until it's cleaned up if Band ever gets around to that. Had you guys seen this? And if so, what did you think?
I've never seen this. But it's one of those that's like that we talk about from time to time where it was like on the shelf every time I would go to rent a movie. And I just never got around to it. I did not realize that it was Empire at the time, although I would have been vaguely aware as a kid that that was cool, or at least cool to me as a kid. Still cool. Empire's cool.
Yeah, Empire's great. Full Moon, not so much.
Well, at the time, I would have loved Full Moon, so I would have loved that connection. But yeah, Empire's super good stuff. It's like, you know, Empire is like, what if Full Moon had time and money to make things, essentially? Because it's like a lot of the same sort of stuff, like schlocky, campy creature effects stuff. But with the Empire stuff, you know, I feel like it went through a lot more. It had a lot more means, and it went through probably more talented helping hands. But anyway, so yeah, I've always wanted to see this. It always looked like sort of a Last Starfighter sort of affair. And I liked that movie as a kid. And yeah, there's like a lot of fun touches. Like you said, the guy with the four arms. Like it took me a while to even realize he had four arms just because it's like an unnecessary touch. But it is sort of like natural and fun the way that they put it together. So it doesn't like stick out as like something that's like super crazy. It's just like kind of part of the universe. And I think that this movie has a lot of stuff like that. That's fun. I like, oh yeah. At one point with those four hands, he does a handshake with the boring guy, Armstrong. And like, he shakes his hand and then Armstrong, you know, shakes back. And then, so he puts like one of his hands on top, like how you might do, you know, like that two-handed handshake. But then Armstrong reciprocates that, so now they're shaking four hands, and then the guy with the four arms adds his two other hands to it, and I thought that that was really fun.
There's also a moment with those four arms later on where Steve Armstrong or whatever is getting a massage from Shorty, and they're using two different shots, and in the one shot that's close up, it's clear that it's somebody, you know, with different looking hands is just supplying the second pair of hands, just kind of crouching behind Steve Armstrong, you know, because it's in the close-up shot. But then They cut to a wide where they can't do that anymore. And Shorty's arms are just by his side, like not even massaging him anymore. And I fucking love that.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff like that. Like there's a scene where they kind of show him and his forearms like kind of wide, and all of a sudden his body is like a lot thicker to make up for the fact that there's like a guy like inside of him to, you know, like to puppeteer those extra arms. Stuff like that's fun. I like that guy, the Weasel. I would like to have like a George Lucas cut of this where Pauly Shore plays that character though. I think that would be fun.
Is that the guy that kind of looks like a, like the Dracula faced kind of Darth Vader main bad guys that we're talking about here?
Yeah. Robo? He's like that henchman dude for like the main bad guy in this. He has the fight with Shorty at the end.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's kind of like a cat man.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, he was sick.
Yeah, I like that guy. He had a cool attitude. You're right that this movie looks bad. Like, it looks kind of like a BBC show. It's, like, kind of ugly and, like, there's just something, like, real flat about it. It has that look that, like, a lot of the Full Moon movies would later have. Like, I don't know if it's just, like, really cheap film or what the deal is, but it's ugly in a way. I like the first fight that Armstrong has against, like, the big slug guy with, like, all the arms, like, the real tall guy. I liked that a lot. Like, they do this really cool thing in it where, despite the fact that, I mean, there's obviously limitations because it's a big, practical, 10-foot-tall slug monster that a guy is supposed to be boxing. But within those limitations, because, you know, they obviously can't shoot super wide because it's a big monster puppet, there's not a lot they can do. But what they do is really great. Like, the way that he punches and stuff, like, he does, like, all these weird, like, fast punches and they coordinate it in a way where it looks like an actual, like, real martial art, sort of, like, the way he punches. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to explain, but it felt, despite the fact that it's, like, real locked off, you don't see the bottom half of the monster, it does feel like as real of a fight as you can get with a guy boxing a big, you know, Halloween costume. And it looks cool. Yeah, like, it's a cool-looking monster on top of that. I don't mean to knock the monster. After he also fights another sort of like big alligator guy, he spars with him in a scene that I think is, you know, while he's training, and it's a scene that I think is really fun because they're training, and they take a break for a minute, and then Armstrong's trainers tell the alligator monster alien guy, you know, go in there, go spar for another round, and he's like really complaining about it. He's like, no, this guy's an animal, he's a monster, you know, and I thought that was very cute.
And then, the apology afterwards is great too.
Yeah, yeah. And so so he's like another big monster guy that they have in a believable sort of a fight. But then the last fight is him against Horn, and Horn's like just like a bipedal guy with like, you know, kind of a scary mask and stuff. So once they were freed up to actually have a big fight, like I would have really thought that fight would have been better. Since this is the first time that Armstrong's been freed up to fight, you know, essentially just a dude, even though he's got like alien makeup on. So I was let down by that. It felt a little bit anticlimactic that fight wasn't as fun as some of the other ones. Also, there's a fun scene during that fight where like Armstrong's been like, you know, poisoned or whatever, and he comes out all sick to fight because, you know, he's got the will. And the announcer says that Armstrong represents the hopes and dreams of all the humans. And I love that because it makes like super explicit the subtext of like every sports movie and every fighting tournament movie ever made. that our hero represents the hopes and dreams of everybody watching. They just spell it out for you. So I liked that. But yeah, I thought this was fun. It's... you know, I would say it's good. It's probably on the lower end of a lot of the Empire stuff I've seen, but definitely it would be on the higher end of a lot of the Full Moon stuff I've seen, and it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah, I think you guys are kind of underselling this a little bit. I had never seen this before. I was always kind of aware of it. I liked the whenever I would see the poster, I would be intrigued. And this, in fact, I have owned this movie for about 7 years now, and have not popped it in because it's part of a four pack. Like there's like a four movie collection that had America 300 or 3000 in it. That movie that we did on the show all those many years ago. And so I was like, it has America 3000, the Time Guardian, Eliminators and Arena on it. And so I've had it around. I've never watched Arena. So yeah, I finally got a chance to pop this DVD in for the show this week. And yeah, I was actually pretty impressed. I like Empire a lot too. I mean, this is obviously on the tail end of Empire into their transition into Full Moon. But most of that 80s Empire stuff has a pretty good batting average with me. I mean, obviously there's some classics in there like Reanimator and stuff, but even some of the lesser Empire ones, I really enjoy. And, you know, I think that I say this a lot, but if this is one that had I seen this as a kid, oh yeah, this would be an all-time favorite of mine. Because yeah, like you said, what's better? You know, you've got the classic boxing movie, you got a classic monster movie, you got a classic sci-fi movie, all in one. And you know, I think this looks pretty high budget for Empire standards. I mean, just on makeup effects alone, you know, regardless of what you think of the quality, I think the quality is actually really good on a lot of these. I think they, you know, they hold up as like cool practical monster effects. I mean, I would watch a full-blown like documentary on the making of a lot of these you know, visual effects. I think the monster molding and some of the paint jobs on these, I think, look really good. And like Parker said, you know, in the boxing, they don't get a lot of movement and stuff, but the movement that they do get looks pretty good, especially when there's one boxing scene where he boxes, you know, like we talked about, the giant grasshopper guy. And, you know, the figure is just so big that it's like almost impossible to do anything with. But at the same time, I think it still looks pretty good. What doesn't look good is this transfer, as you guys have mentioned. And it's a real bummer, too, because on this version, on the four movie DVD, it's full frame. It's got, like you guys said, that ugly look to it, which I think could be improved by a restoration. And so I started looking, I was like, is there a better version of this movie out there anywhere? And the only thing that I could find is that Full Moon, or, you know, Charles Band, put out a box set, a Blu-ray box set of, like, all of the Empire stuff. And it's all on Blu-ray, except Arena, which is the only disc that comes on a DVD. It has not been restored at all. It's still the full frame, and there are zero bonus features. So anywhere you look, you're getting a shitty version of Arena, which is a bummer, because I feel like there's a good looking version, at least a better looking version out there where you could really appreciate some of this special effects work. Because, again, it's 1989. It's before computer animated stuff. So it's on that tail end of really good looking practical effects and robotics and animatronics. And I think that stuff is just fun to watch anyway. And then you add in, you know, this boxing, you know, story, which, again, I loved boxing movies growing up. And I love, you know, just the general trajectory of those movies. So, I had fun with that. And, you know, the cast, I think, and this is really cool. You know, while the main guy, Paul Satterfield as Steve Armstrong, is a little bit boring, I was immediately in love with him because he's the asshole dude in the Blobs segment of Creepshow 2. And then his buddy Shorty Hamilton Camp, I didn't recognize, but he felt very familiar to me. And then I looked up his IMDb page and realized he voiced pretty much every single cartoon I ever watched as a child. Like, he's one of those guys that just has a credit sheet as long as your arm, and you just read it, and it's every cartoon.
Yeah,
watch, like, he
had a recording career too as like a folk singer.
Yeah, so he was cool, and again, kind of cartoony, but made for a good sidekick / Mick from Rocky to our kind of boring protagonist. But yeah, it moved by at a pretty quick pace. It's also got, like you mentioned, Claudia Christian in this as like the, you know, the coach / like promoter that brings him into the world. And you know, you said this had kind of like a Star Trek Deep Space Nine. She was on that show Babylon 5, which always plays on like sci-fi and the Comet Network. And yeah, this movie kind of had an overall feel of like a show like that to me. And I don't know if that was just the presence of Claudia Christian or what. But yeah, I mean, not a masterpiece by any means, and obviously has a lot of cheesy elements to it. But like I said, I found this entertaining. I mean, I kind of reverted back to my, 12-year-old self, and was kind of kicking myself for not having seen this back in the early 90s. Because like I said, I would have loved this as a kid. But even still channeling my inner kid, I found a lot to enjoy about this. And I appreciate the special effects in this. I think they're entertaining.
Well, very nice. And Yeah, I mean, I don't want to come off as sounding like I hated this. I am open to watching a restoration. It's a bummer to hear that the band version that's out there is not restored. At that rate, I would say just go to YouTube. I actually, throughout this recording, searched it on YouTube and found there's a channel called VHS Drive-In. This guy has been, for the past year or so, uploading about one movie a day, just these VHS rips, the entire movie is, and he's got a whole lot of cool stuff on here. He's got all the Witchboard movies. He's got Mausoleum and Extro and Deadly Spawn, Alligator 1 and 2, and a whole bunch of stuff. So this is on his channel. So go to VHS Drive-In if you want to see Arena and preview it maybe before you buy it. But yeah, I mean, I thought overall this was more fun than WrestleMania 36 and way shorter, too. So yeah. I didn't mind watching this at all. And I'm curious to see if they can find enough elements to ever restore this. But I think that about wraps it up for Arena. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, Parker, Kevin, and myself will do battle with the Deadly Horn in the ring. So stick around.
Hey, bro.
I don't know. Hey. Come on, look me in the eye. Let's rap right now.
Yeah,
what's going on? Let's have some street talk.
Straight gay talk.
Rest in peace, kissing contest. Adios, pool party radio. So long, illogical contraption. We see all of you. Support your favorite podcast today at patreon.com/junkfooddinner.
Radio's right. Supposed to be a release, so just right. Do your thing, Shane.
Radio, please. Way to go, douchebag. Don't put me in a corner, man.
I'm letting you do your thing.
I have thick picks.
Thick picks?
Never mind. I'm gonna go like a ham.
I think we should just like call it a night.
No.
Not a boy. Just leave the beds on and just look at each other. Just stare at each other.
Just like hang out.
Just hang out, dude. Chit chat.
Just hang out.
All right, I think that about wraps it up for the show this week. Next week will be a fun one, I guarantee it. It's because it's one of my favorite formats that we have explored on this show ever. It's going to be our monthly short films week. We'll be doing Quasi at the Quacadero in 1975. Is that how you say that? Who knows? We'll find out next week. Night of the Living Bread, not to be confused with a George Romero film. No, this is the 1990, and not to be confused with a Tom Savini film. This is the 1990 Night of the Living Bread. So that'll be cool. And also the very new David Lynch short film that's on Netflix, What Did Jack Do? So that's very exciting. Everybody on the show seems to be loving David Lynch. You know, it's not just me anymore. We're all Lynchmans. So you'll have to tune in next week to see, you know, the further developing story of our Lynch love. In between now and then, you can do all the things that we tell you every week. Look us up on social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. We're on there. Send us an email at jftpodcast@gmail.com. Or leave us a message at 347-746-JUNK. That's 5865. You guys know that. You guys know you can just go to Facebook and click on that call now button to leave us a message. If you don't want to do any of that, just record a message into your phone and then email it to us. We will accept those as well. If that, in fact, does it, which I think it does, unless you guys got anything, and I doubt that you do.
Hey, why not plug that Patreon one last time?
Oh, I you know what I should. We've got a Patreon. It's at patreon.com/junkfooddinner. And I like it over there. I think it's a cool place to hang out. I think it's a cool place to learn more about how you can slide a few bucks our way in exchange for some quality entertainment that we've been recording for you guys behind the paywall all these months. So if you haven't checked that out, go check it out at patreon.com/junkfooddinner. Check out Pool Party Radio. There is plenty of back episodes. There was one released, I don't know, in the past 6 months or something. Will there be another one in quarantine? I would guess that Jason Frisbee's daily schedule is a little bit clearer now, so I would hope that there are plans in the works.
I don't want to give anything away, but me and Frisbee have just found our new mentor in life. This guy Tyrone, who likes to fuck people's wives long dick style. So I would be willing to wager that there will be a new episode just so we can talk about him.
He's screwing these wives from more than 6 feet away, is what you're saying.
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, that's long dick style. That's what that means.
I know the people in New York take that stuff very seriously, so I'm going to make sure the social distancing is exercised. But until then, I think that about wraps it up. This is your friend, Sen Biro, for Kelvin Moose and Perky Beantown Bowman, saying, keep washing them dishes.
Nice.
We done did it.
Yeah, somebody's Buff. Looking at oldies. Yeah,
what's the, it's a very old. What's the date today? Come
on. It's 5/13.
Help me.
420.
Oh, 420, bro?
Yeah. I mean, the 420, bro.
420, bro.
Traveling. Toronto kid.
All right.
Yeah.
Say thank the Lord we are recorded. Say thank the Lord we are recording.
I thought that we were watching Super Inframan for like the whole week. And then when I started this, I was like, this is not the Shaw Brothers thing. But we already did that, right?
Who picked this?
I did.
I had it all backwards.
Yeah, I feel like that is how it should have been. Any other should have been.
Everybody knows I love Empire. I don't like full moon. I'm the Empire. I'm the Empire. I'm the Empire. I'm the Empire. I'm the Empire.